love you, and longer if I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. How long will I want you? As long as you want me to, and longer by far. How long will I hold you? As long as your father told you, as long as you can.
Good Friday morning, folks. If it is Friday, and if it's 11 a.m. and you're listening to this particular station, CQW 95.9 FM, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address with your host Al. And it's a nice day out there, actually. 21 degrees right now, and I think it's headed for about 26. And it's going to be a really, really, really pleasant day. But for folks who have to spend 24/7 out there, no day is a real, really, really pleasant day. So do your best. Go to Tim's, buy an extra coffee, buy an extra water, and hand it out to the folks that you know are going to be sitting right outside, right out front. Today, I have, we talked a little bit about Pride Month last week, and today I have one of my favorite people on the show today, Sandy Strong. Are you there, Sandy?
I am, Al. It just makes me blush. How come I'm your favorite?
Well, you know, you have that. You have such spirit, you know, and I truly admire. And you know, as you know, we both follow each other on Facebook, and I really appreciate what you do. And we had you on last when we were campaigning, I think, for Manitoba Legislature.
Yeah, that was me. I just want to say though that I admire you too. You know, you're a beacon of hope for a lot of people out there. You do a lot of good. So,
thank you so much. I appreciate
mutual fans.
Mutual fans. everybody, advocates in their own way, and we all have gifts, and we all have our things that we stand on, and our beliefs that we stand on, and I'm really, really happy to have you on today, because between you and Bradley West are the two people that I admire.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and how I start out every show is just giving a brief bio of where you came from, what you care to share, and how you got to the point now, and what you're doing today.
Well, it's a long, sordid story.
Like
most trans people, I was very closeted for most of my life. I transitioned finally late in life, and I turned 50, because I was too afraid of all the bullies and everybody.
Yes.
When I was young, right?
Mm-hmm.
I knew who I was when I was very young. I played with all the girls. I had all the girl feelings, but, people, including my father, tried to, bully all that out of me.
Mm-hmm.
As well, that wasn't how you were supposed to behave. So, you try to learn to do it as expected by your assigned gender.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll defend my doctor. He he picked me up and spanked my bum and, you know, took a look and he labeled me. Right?
Yes.
And that label was something I fought pretty much my whole life. And, you know, and it caused me some struggles. It caused me a lot of insecurity to get to this point, you know, in my life. And when I did finally come out, you know, my life, it went down into the toilet.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, I lost a job that I'd had for 15 years that I
Whoa.
Thought I had some allies at that would have, you know, supported me through
mm-hmm.
my change.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't to be. And then a couple of weeks later, the woman that I was married to, that was supposedly my soulmate, had a pre-planned exit, and she deserted me too. So I was
tough.
Devastated. Wow. I was suicidal. I was seconds away from making an attempt when my daughter surprised me and came home, and she was so very, very angry at what I was about to do, and she reminded me, you know, that I was loved. And
mm-hmm.
next thing I know, I was surrounded by friends and supported, and I got some counseling and,
mm-hmm.
you know, managed to squeak through. But, you know, there were times in that period where, you know, I had no hope.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid myself of becoming homeless. I
mm-hmm.
had home and bills to pay and just couldn't afford to pay them. And I figured, you know, I would be out on the street. So, you know, I did manage to, you know, stay connected to my community. And as is important for anybody that's struggling, you know, I found hope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tend to be an optimist. So, you know, I stuck it through and grew.
Yeah.
And a lot of that growth came from realizing, you know, some privilege that I had and that it was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it really opened my eyes to a lot of people that were struggling. And it wasn't just people like me. It wasn't just trans folk
mm-hmm.
or the gay community. It was, you know, people experiencing homelessness.
Yes.
Indigenous people, you know, women,
mm-hmm.
You know, all of these people. And all of a sudden, you know, I've been a feminist my whole life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden I was acutely aware of exactly, you know, what society put on us. And I think through that is one of the reasons I got involved in politics, because it really opened my eyes as to how many people fall through so many cracks in our system
mm-hmm.
and are not properly supported in society. So that's always been the reason that I want to make a difference in the world. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I started with my own community and it's kind of grown from there.
Yeah, and
working in the legislature has just been amazing.
I'll bet it has. You're not in the legislature anymore, or are you?
Oh, yeah, no, I still work for
the Senate. Oh, you're
still there? Yeah.
Oh, awesome. That's really good. Good to hear. I wasn't sure about where you were at in that regard. But
yeah,
it's nice to hear that you're still there.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying it. Debbie's amazing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, I had the opportunity to, I was called in to the talk to the PC caucus. I'm not sure you knew that or not, but.
I didn't know.
Yeah, and it was really an interesting call. I got a call from Wayne Watsko, who's the head of the PC party now, and they wanted me to come in and just chat with the shadow cabinet minister, MLA on housing, Carrie Hebert, and speak to caucus. I read people in situations very, very well. Being an old salesperson who really, you know, does that, you know, makes you successful. I had a little bit of a difficult time with that particular group, and we'll see what happens there. And it was so good being in that building. It must be such a great such a great place to work with the just the atmosphere in the building. You walk up the marble stairs, and you know it's such a great place. But
I remember the first time I walked in there, you know, for the job. You know, and my heels clicking down that was kind of very empowered me.
Yes.
I was always very afraid, and there I was, and mm-hmm. you know, and my job was to make a difference.
Yes.
That really, really did. But anytime you're in that building, you just come knock on my door. We'll hang out.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
Yeah.
I have opportunity here and there to get in there. I'm glad you're there, you know, and doing your thing there too. It's really, really important. we are in Pride Month still, I think, till the end of the month. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And we recently, When did the Pride Month start, and when did the Pride Parade start?
Well, Pride Month has only become a thing as prides around the world have grown.
Not that long ago.
No, probably within the last, decade.
Mm-hmm.
Our first pride here was in the late 80s.
Yep.
When gay marriage was finally legalized and recognized.
Yeah, that took time.
That took an incredible fight.
Mm-hmm.
And there were about 250 people that walked in a parade, and it came from Osborne Village,
mm-hmm.
ended up at the legislature for a rally. And there were a lot of people that were wearing bags on their heads because
yes.
they were terrified of being
yep.
recognized, outed, fired,
yep.
Things like that. And it's a shame, but that kind of progress takes time. Even my first parade, or first time I went to watch it, I stuck to the shadows, I stuck to the corners. I wanted to see what it was all about, what was going on, and I didn't want anybody to even suspect, and that was 30 years ago, maybe.
Mm.
Yes. Because
I remember when all that started.
Yeah.
And when gay marriages were deemed legal finally.
Finally. And I have friends that are trying to get their marriage registered because they got married, way back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're still together, and it wasn't recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't on a piece of paper.
Do you think society has come far enough? Do you think?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't think at all. But maybe talk about that just a little bit, because by now you think everybody would get it, but.
Well, you know what they did, and until Donald Trump got elected,
yes.
in the States, we were all making progress. We were all mm-hmm. starting to feel that especially countries like Canada and a few other places
yep.
in the world were all moving forward, and then this person comes in
yep.
and he. Like our current leader of the federal conservatives,
yes.
is stirring the pot, and he just started making people angry.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are angry, they lash out and they see people not like them as a threat, and that's kind of what we are to them.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is that it tends to be typical I'm going to use the word underprivileged
mm-hmm.
white males,
mm-hmm.
Who are feeling, all of a sudden women, oh my God, they're everywhere. They have jobs that I should have had. They
yeah.
have this, all these queer people and all of these,
mm-hmm.
Men transitioning into women, and they're taking this and they're feeling threatened.
And
I can respect the fact that they feel threatened, because I remember, a number of years ago when I was job hunting and to be fair to me back in the day, I was a typical white guy,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't, I wasn't that white guy. But, I'd look at a job application, and if you're a woman, you have preference. If you're indigenous, you have preference.
Yeah.
If you're a visible minority.
Yep.
And I'm going, well, what about my preference? I need to feed my family. I need, income and support. So
mm-hmm.
from a very, limited perspective, I get what they're feeling. But they also have to learn to realize that this is the 21st century and all of this stuff has happened around them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to feel threatened. They just need to be part of it. And it's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to like the fact that somebody's gay or trans. You don't have to associate with them, but you don't have to hate them. Hating someone takes will.
It does.
It takes effort. And
it really does.
You
and
learn
we've been working on and we made progress on human rights and all that, over the last several decades. But, all that is going to change right back when Donald Trump gets elected. If he gets elected,
I hope he does.
Because if he gets, there's going to be a North American dictatorship, and we're all going to be under that, under that umbrella. But rights are being eroded everywhere you look at the state, right? Everywhere.
And Pierre Poilievre is trying to do the same.
Trying to do the very same thing.
He'll use the notwithstanding clause and all
yep.
kinds of other things to attack people's sovereign human rights. And that's Nazis.
It is.
What happened back then.
The entire world is pushing the right wing agenda. We just had elections in Europe, and they made great strides in Europe. They didn't get elected everywhere, but they made great strides. And I'm really, really afraid for for everybody's human rights, but especially LGBTQ, because they are the first one to be not, I don't want to use the word picked on, but that's kind of a
attacked.
Attacked. That's the right word. They're the first ones being attacked, and I just I just don't like the way things are going down south, and you know what happens in the south comes up here too.
Yeah, and that's a sad thing, because I always was proud of the fact that I was a Canadian, or we are Canadian, and we're different. You know, we're nicer, we're politer, but it's insidious how that snuck its way up here. And our politicians are learning how to manipulate people using their anger, their base fears and anger.
Base fears and anger. Yeah. That's exactly.
And people don't make good decisions when they're angry. How many good decisions have you made when you're angry? You just don't.
None. Right.
They're pushing people's buttons. I mean, when you look at the last provincial campaign, and I'm happy that it failed, but our provincial conservatives did that.
Mm-hmm.
Push buttons for justice. Push buttons against Indigenous rights. Push buttons against trans people.
Against housing. Against
housing. And so you make people angry. Well, yeah, why should somebody else have a house if I can't?
Yeah.
Or why should somebody else do this if I can't? It's not about that. You know, giving somebody, there's a common adage, giving somebody a piece of pie, there's still pie left for you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, what they're all talking about, you know, cutting taxes and making the divide between the rich and the poor.
Yes. Greater.
With human rights eroding, that's the kind of stuff that leads to revolutions. Look what happened in France.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day.
Yep.
You know, and that's what happened in Germany with the rise of the Nazis and so many little dictatorships around the world. The big divide, and all of a sudden somebody's going to rebel and say, hey, you know, that's not right. And
we're seeing that happen right in front of our eyes. Real time. It's really incredibly scary stuff. You know, that's one of the things that keeps me awake at night, knowing that particular election in the States is only 140 days away, right?
Yeah.
And how, either way, it's going to be a tough one.
And ours is coming up soon, too.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And
there's going to be a shift. But for me, it's really, really scary. But how do you think what do you think the human rights could human rights agencies can do more of? And do you think that they've been doing okay with it or not okay in pushing LGBTQ rights?
Well, I mean, I think there are
and please correct me if I say something wrong.
No, that's fine. I mean, in Manitoba, we tend to say 2S, LGBTQ,
QIA,
because we like to put the word two-spirit here.
Yep,
reflects, you know, on the home that two-spirit Indigenous people have here in Manitoba, the phrase was coined here in Manitoba. So we do like to put it first.
Yes.
Because a lot of areas of the world don't recognize yet two-spirit.
Right.
Because it wasn't part of their culture, right? And here it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, human rights agencies sadly seem to be underfunded.
They are. I know that for a fact. Yes. Yes.
You know, I remember when I lost my job and I went there and I found out that, A, I didn't have human rights, but they were able to, within a couple of months, sort things out so that I got at least a worthless paper apology and some money.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't what I wanted, but that's all I could fight for at the time because I didn't have human rights as a transgender person.
Yeah.
But, you know, as human rights complaints grow and grow and grow, and organizations that are in place to fund them, like the Human Rights Commission, like Legal Aid, people have no resources. If you can't afford a high-priced lawyer to fight a human rights case, you don't have a human rights case.
No.
So I think, you know, that human rights organizations, you know, like those commissions, need to be funded properly so that anybody that comes forward with a case has quick intake, proper service, and their concerns are addressed before they get out of.
I spent a good deal of time since the symposium with Karen Sharma, you know, who is the director, and she was actually my keynote this year at symposium too.
That's awesome.
But I know that there's a distinct lack of funds that go into the Human Rights Commission here, and they operate on a very, very much a shoestring budget. And it's hard to believe that they can even get anything done with the budget that they have.
Yeah, But they're, you know, they're like a lot of, they're almost like a nonprofit that has to do fundraisers to make sure that, you know, people with addictions are properly cared for.
Yes.
I was just at one the other night, you know, and like, why should schools, hospitals, and addiction centers have to fundraise?
Yeah.
That should all be funded by government.
Oh, it should.
Because it's looking after our citizens. We shouldn't have to fundraise to be able to help somebody that needs an addictions counseling or, you know, some sort of service now.
Yes. And, you know, yeah,
people with addictions need help now when they're ready, when they say, please, I need help. Not, well, it's not in 6 months and then my game will pass.
And I really think that our previous government was really detrimental in a lot of areas on human rights.
Yeah,
I really, really feel that way. Well, we've seen it, you know, factually, we've seen, you know, budget cuts everywhere. And, you know, I do feel like our current government is moving in the right direction in a few areas, but they still got a long way to go. But I feel that they're moving in the right direction. But we'll, you know, find out soon, I guess, or within time. But
there's potential, and I remain hopeful.
I guess that's what we could say. Yes,
yeah.
You know, and I think hearts are generally speaking in the right place. But again, there's still, again, a lack of understanding on a lot of issues, and I think that only comes with time. But let's hope it doesn't take too much time for folks to really realize.
Well, that's where all this hatred comes back. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that are pushing events back against trans people are woefully misinformed.
Yes.
If you remember last October, there was a million march.
Yes.
You know, from City Hall to the legislature.
Yep.
And those happened around the world, and they happened because they were pushed by a very small, well-funded, extreme right-wing group that weaponized things that aren't true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, you know, they're saying that minors, people under the age of 18, can transition surgically, medically, and it's just patently not true. Even for a child who's going through puberty to get puberty blockers, there is so much red tape. They have to have doctor consultations, psychologists, parental approval, monitoring, and it's not everybody. Not every kid stands up and says, I'm trans and I need these things.
Yeah.
It's 0.5% of the human population. 0.5.
That's amazing.
0.5. So in Manitoba, we have like a million people.
Yeah.
So that's 5,000 people all over Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a million people came to shame those people, and that's not right. And they use their children. Like, there's news footage of people holding their crying toddlers to a camera, going, "Save my children! Save my children!"
Yeah,
your children aren't under threat.
But you know, one of the worst things in today's society is that truth is a casualty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's every single day you hear untruths going on over the air. You know, over the air, and it's. I mean, acutely untrue statements, right? But it doesn't seem to matter that there's no truth out there. And it's like, wow, whatever happened to decency and common sense? And
people ran out of time to do their own research. They see a headline, they see something on Facebook or the internet, and they go, okay, absorb.
Yeah.
You know, and the more they absorb those simple headlines and whatnot, the easier it is for them to get angry. If you actually do the research, like people like I have done, and people that are advocating for the truth and for what's right in the trans and 2SLGBTQ+ community, you know, you learn to understand how difficult it is. It's very difficult to do this. It's not easy, and people have to understand how small a group it is, and nobody's threatening you.
Like, why would you know? Again, there's that falsehood that, you know,
we're just asking to be ourselves, like everybody else.
Because, entirely.
An average person just wants to be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just going to take a quick music and station break and come back and maybe talk a little bit about LGBTQ homelessness. And because, you know, folks experience tougher times than most out there. All right, come back. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
I miss my brother and my friends. Take me home again. I've been
Well, folks, we're back, and that was Indian City that my wonderful producer, Debbie Lake, came up with, and the album is here now. And why did we play that? Because, again, we're speaking on human rights of LGBTQ2S peoples, and we're also, this is National Indigenous Peoples Day, and they have suffered like no one else in our country has suffered through having no human rights adhered to when it comes to indigenous rights and history. And boy, you know, we could go on and on forever about that. What are your thoughts about that, Shandy?
Well, indeed we could. I mean, you know, I remember I grew up in the North End in a very diverse community. We had people from all over. You know, I was in a predominantly Jewish street, and
yes,
I had friends that were Ukrainian, Polish, Black, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino,
yep,
and Indigenous. And, you know, one of my best friends, I actually just learned that his big brother passed away the other day, was Bob Basisti, and he was born without an arm. You know, he had a hook, you know, throughout our school years and everything like that. And his dad tried to open up a fish store not far from a high school. And, you know, cool things like that. And, you know, he was a very gifted artist. And, you know, we didn't talk about Indigenous history when I was in high school in the 70s. When all the light came on about residential schools, I learned that it was very likely that his parents, and probably him when he was younger, were in residential schools, because the last residential school in Manitoba was in River Heights, not far from Route 90 and Gordon there. And it shocked me that closed while I was in high school, and that people were going there. So, you know, residential schools isn't something that happened a long, long time ago. It's something that happened in my lifetime, probably to people that I know. And we couldn't talk about it. We didn't know to talk about it. And you want to talk about, you know, human rights violations.
Mm-hmm.
There's major ones right there.
Major, yes. And to a far lesser extent, and, I'm not Indigenous, but Char is Indigenous, and so I know a little bit about. But you know what? We can only guess. When it comes to my housing, I don't, I don't make any decisions when it comes to, you know, because 75% of our homeless are indigenous, and 68% of my participants in my housing are indigenous, just organically speaking, and that's just how it happened. But I make no decisions on indigenous issues at all. I let the people that know, the elders and the indigenous case managers, I let them make all the decisions, and because they're much more qualified than I, you know, and how dare I even think that I could make a decision, right? You know, and again, that's the same way when it comes to people speaking on LGBTQ2S, if you want to use that term, or even lived experience. We have people trying to assume that that they know more about homelessness than the person with lived experience. You know, for example, we're talking Hope. You know, I've had six meetings this week on Hope Alley, right? And so there's a discussion about canopy. There's a discussion about radiating heat lamps and canopies and what other things should be a priority there. And you know, when I was out there, I suffered frostbite every conceivable place you could get frostbite. I suffered hypothermia. I suffered heat stroke. And so but people are saying, no, we should do something. No, we should not. We need to give these people, comfort, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that my knowledge of that, my fire comes from my lived experience, knowing how painful and how awful it can be out there. We treat like second-class citizens a lot, or have. I simply don't anymore because nobody dares. and again, you know, it comes to the same thing with you, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure it took you many years to get to the point where people aren't speaking down to you, or maybe some still are, but you have a reputation. But why should you have to become a person with a reputation or with stature not to be treated?
Why can't we just be a person, right?
Why can't we just be a person? Go ahead.
It always, you know, shot. It was like high school sometimes. You know, you're going, oh, how come I don't fit in with that clique or that clique or that clique?
Yeah.
You know, and you, it starts to go, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?
It
took me a long time and support from my own clique, if you were.
Yes.
To find that, you know, it took people telling me that, hey, you're okay. Hey, I admire you. Hey, you spoke well. Hey.
Yes.
And, you know, you start to go.
Yep.
What? Yeah, you know, it took a long, long time for me to realize that, and I'm still, you know, every time I get that, and
we struggle with it. We struggle with imposter syndrome, because we've been put down a lot. And you know, that doesn't permit us to really accept. But you know, I'm on this big acknowledgement kick these days. Ever since I was in Edmonton, I heard a psychologist speak on acknowledgement. It was one of the things in her otherwise boring 2-hour speech.
But, at least you came away with something.
came away with something. And that was acknowledgement of, and it's slightly off topic here, but it's acknowledgement of who we are. It's acknowledgement of what we've been able to accomplish. And because so many of us live in that world where we don't always accept that we're doing a good job. And at some point in time, we have to actually acknowledge that, right? You know, because
we have to stay humble about it too.
And we have to stay humble about it. And we come from both places where, for me, the homeless experience has kept me humble, because there's, when you're out there, there's nobody beneath you on the food chain, right? You're at the bottom of the food chain, and there's nowhere else to go. And the humility is a big deal. But also, you know, acknowledge the people around you and acknowledge the work that they are doing, and tell them, right? Because, you know, acknowledgement helps people to rise just a little bit. And put it.
I reiterate that you do good work, sir.
Thank you, as do you. And talk to me about our listeners about that experiment on the homeless, people experiencing homelessness, Salvation Army tried to do something about it a number of years ago and put in an area on the second floor, and it didn't work. You know, talk to me about that. I know you probably know something about that.
Yeah, actually, I just had a tour of your facility just the other day. And Salvation Army had a really negative reputation with my community, but as did Siloam, as did
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the other homeless agencies.
Right.
You know, and
which is a huge barrier.
Which is a huge barrier, and you know, a lot of people would point fingers at Salvation Army and go, you know, it's because they're faith based.
Mm.
And you know, I'm not a religious person myself, but you know, I respect people's rights to do that.
Yeah.
Our meeting the other day was very eye-opening because I got to talk to the gentleman that's been the executive director, and he showed us around.
Where was the meeting? At Salvation Army?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mark is a good friend of mine. And
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you know, he was very, very welcoming. Mm-hmm. He told us, you know, about their LGBT spaces and things like that. And he was saying it was closed because they just found room for them in the general population.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to their door and you identify as female, you're put in with the women.
Okay.
And if anybody has a problem with that, they're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, wow.
Well, Mark is...
what my friend told me, you know, was their experience.
Mark came back, was gone for a number of years. And what I appreciated about Mark was when I was there, you know, 13 to 11 years ago, for 14 and a half months, he was the only one that treated me like a human being and did not treat me with any dismissal like a lot of other people in the building did.
He seems like a very kind person.
He is a very kind person. Then he went away for a few years, and now he's back with an attitude like of wanting to make positive change. You know,
well, he was telling. Yeah, I even talked to him about that tiny home project that we were involved in, and he says, "Yeah, we need to talk about this. We've got money, we've got space, and I'm you know, it could happen."
Yes,
we're kind of going, "Oh my God, how's this not going to?" What's
yeah.
going to go on with
it? So, yeah, he's actually, you know, right now he's also getting involved in the community more. He's going out to meetings, which he never did. And he's starting to really take an active role in the community, which is good to see because he's not that kind of person, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's starting to make a motion. But he's always been the person that has respected me as an individual and not treated me like something less. And
I got that vibe from him, definitely.
Yeah, and he's a quiet individual, but we have a connection going back all those years, right? So, but he won't come on air because he's afraid he's going to say something that he might get fired for. So, but he's a good one. So you know, again, for folks on the street who are LGBTQ, it's tougher too because there's again probably more discrimination on the street than mm-hmm. in other areas. Or can you talk about
that? Stigma is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I read a report a little while ago that said that about 40% of the homeless population in the U.S. is on the 2S LGBT community, and you know, presumably here,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not quite as high in terms of numbers because we have the same population, but I, you know, I know that today there are people that are, you know, that come out as trans or queer or whatever, and they're kicked out of their home, especially in rural Manitoba,
mm-hmm.
or they leave those environments.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, you know, my dad tried to bully it out of me, and I had no place to go. I was,
yeah.
you know, getting ready to move out by the time I was 18. But a lot of kids these days, they come out sooner, and they have to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So they come through the larger centers and they end up homeless.
Yeah.
You know, McDonald Youth Services and Ray, you know, they're aware
mm-hmm.
and they help. But, you know, it's the other people on the street that are kind of, well, you know, what are you? And in their defense, a lot of people on the street that I've met and talked to, you know, they're amazing people.
Yes.
You know, they're open-minded, they're caring, they know what it's like. So they're very non-judgmental, but there's mm-hmm. always a few that make it difficult for them.
Yeah, you know, I've had a good opportunity to talk to Lucas Maitland a number of times. I know him going back to At Home Chez Soi way back there too, and you know he went through a very very difficult time as a child growing up in a rural town in Saskatchewan with very very Christian or fundamental type parents, and he's a guy who had to leave his family at a younger age simply because, you know, of his situation. And you know, it's tough when you can't not even accepted by your family. You know?
Yeah. That's the hardest thing, you know, because everybody feels, oh, family's there for you no matter what. And
but it's not that way.
It's not. I remember in, you know, my first marriage, you know, there were often sections of the family that weren't talking to each other.
Yes.
And just like, how can that be? You guys are family. We should always be able to find a way to work it out. And, you know, there were some really awful people in that family.
Yes.
You know, my then wife's uncle was a pervert. You know, he put his hands on her where he shouldn't, and things like that. And the family defended him. And I'm going like, okay, you know, this is a problem.
Yeah.
But when I came out, I had some difficulties and, you know, made some decisions with regards to, you know, my youngest daughter. And she's still not really talking to me these days. And I try. And so I don't always understand. For me, because I'm a bridge builder, I always like, okay, how can we make this work?
Yes.
How can I understand, you know, what my side of it is and what did I do to you? Let me apologize. Let's work things out.
Yep.
And it may be not, you know, wine and roses the very next day, but we started on a path to heal. And, you know, everybody, especially today, needs to heal. So, you know,
and healing is a process.
It is.
It can take a very long time.
Yeah. So, you know, I gotta stay optimistic.
that's it. But you know the wars that you and I have both been through in our, you know, in our different scenarios and our different life paths, you know, are very much the same. You know, we treated with discrimination, treated with being, you know, judged against, and stigma. You know, having stigma used against us and all that kind of stuff. It's what that does, though. It makes you stronger in the long run. Right now, I just, you know, I'm a pushback, you know, person. I make no apologies for pushing back these days, because it's sometimes it's the only way that you get things done, right? Sure, you have to.
Well, because you're not fighting for yourself, you're fighting for others.
That's it too. Well, just one last question here about are you finding, or do you find that people are discriminating against when it comes to getting housing, or is that an issue?
You know, with my work with the legislature, most of the discrimination I find that people are challenged is because they have some sort of physical or mental disability.
Yes, you know, well, that's a big one.
You know, I know a fellow, for example, he needs, I think he finally got his knee replaced, but he had mobility issues. Him and his wife, who used a motorized chair to get around, lived on a second floor. And they tried and they tried and they tried and they tried to get a main floor suite in the same building, which was vacant for months and months and months, and Manitoba Housing wouldn't hear of it. Other people that have, you know, mental health struggles, you know, have unsympathetic landlords, you know, that because they're difficult to deal with, well, I got to get rid of you. So, you know, this one fella who I used in my past life, you know, built a life, built a business, and him and his landlord didn't get along because of this, and the landlord just continued to make it difficult. Manitoba Housing and the rental board, you know, they were not sympathetic.
Yeah, you know, the rental board needs a big overhaul, let me tell you.
Yeah. You know, and this needs to be learned, that, you know, you can't treat a person like this, because that person is going to end up homeless.
Yeah.
And the people that be employed are going to end up out of work, and they're going to end up.
Yep, exactly.
You know, we need to find ways to, again, work things out. You know, let's you have a right to be angry, but let's work things out.
Yes.
And that goes for anything in society. Yes, you were treated badly, you have a right, but, you know, being constantly angry at someone and being vindictive,
that doesn't help, the reason you
use civilized and civilization.
Yes.
It's got to work things out.
You have to, you know, it's just, it really puts up barriers too when we're constantly, you know, in that frame of mind. Anything else that you'd like to leave with our listeners before we wrap it up?
Well, I mean, you know, for those of us that are celebrating this month, happy Pride, and I think, you know, we have to realize that, you know, the hate that's in the world, that's why we still need Pride.
Yes.
People go, well, you know, Pride started as a protest, and while today it's a celebration, it's also a celebration in defiance of the hatred that's in the world that's being directed towards us. You know, and the people that hate us, I'm sorry that you hate us, but please learn that we're no threat. Please learn that, you know, we think you're okay, and we'll be okay too. Mm-hmm. We can talk, we can work things out, but there's no need to hate.
No,
you know,
for sure.
And Pride can be a celebration. It doesn't need to be a protest anymore once people learn not to hate.
Well, absolutely. As I know that you golf, I would one of these days like to get out for a run of golf with you.
Absolutely. I just bought a new set of golf clubs, so let's do it.
All right. We'll keep in touch on Messenger or something and get it done. I'm trying to, you know, one of my goals this year, totally off topic, is to try to get 10 rounds in this year. And then, you know, coming from being unhoused for a lot of years, it takes you a while to build up your financial situation to the point where you can actually get out 10 times a year, right?
So. Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming on air. And
thanks for having me.
You bet, and take care, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Folks, that was Shandy Strong. She works in the legislature, and she ran for the Liberals in the last election. But a really, really wonderful person who is a really strong advocate for the LGBTQ and LGBTQ2S community out there. And just a wonderful person. And, you know, for those of you who look sideways or, you know, maybe question why I'm having a person like that on or has issues with LGBTQ people, maybe it's really, really good just to chat with somebody who is an LGBTQ2 person. And, you know, also, you know, I kind of learned that from the Point in Time Cut, which we're already starting to work on for the fall. And people had such a bad, you know, different ideas about and preconceived notions about who the homeless were until they went out and spent, couple hours on the street talking to them for the Point in Time Count. They came back so excited about meeting these wonderful people on the street and asking if they can go back out again and meet some more, because it was such a great experience. And, you know, their preconceived notions were thrown right out the window once they spent a couple hours talking to folks out there. And I think for those of you who are perhaps exercising judgments against folks, maybe try that one time. You know, I think it would do, you know, everyone a bit of good. And I always say when I'm training, I'm talking about exercising judgments and how to get rid of that. And I always go through this little routine where when you get ready to talk to somebody, and when it comes to homeless, you get ready to talk to somebody with judgment, you get ready to talk down to them because they're homeless and a second-class citizen. I always say, get a box, put it in front of you, open it up, put your judgments and your attitudes and your, you know, the way you're going to speak to these people in a box, close it up, lock it, turn around, throw it out the door, and slam the door behind you. So that box with your judgments and discriminations and biases are not present. And then talk to that person without all that stuff. And it took me a while to get over that. I got over it organically because I treated Charlotte like that for the first 4 years. I spoke down to her because she didn't speak. And what made me think that I should speak to her like an adolescent when this is a very bright individual, just because she has schizophrenia, PTSD, just because people have these diseases does not mean that they're brighter in intellectual or intelligent, but we create these thoughts in our head about who people are, and we shouldn't do that. Talk to somebody. You know, it's Shandy is a really, I just love this person a lot. And, you know, last year she came to Human Rights Symposium 1 and spoke on the issue. And we'll probably have her back again next year. But I hope today's show was enlightening. And we'll be back next week with Bradley West, as we're still on Pride Month. And Bradley West is a manager for equity and diversity at the City Hall, and it's a perfect position for him. He stands strong on LGBTQ and human rights and equity and diversity. And he's on. He's very entertaining. He's got this really good Australian accent, and you're going to be having a good time listening to the show next week. He's got a good sense of humor, and it's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to it. We've been trying to get him on for a while, but now we're finally going to do it. And week following, we're going to have, I can't remember the name of the organization, but a North End organization that deals with youth homelessness and youth exiting out of child welfare system. So come back next week, folks, and enjoy the week, enjoy the weather, and be kind. You go to Tim's, buy an extra coffee, buy an extra bottle of water. Thanks.
Thirsty for analysis debunking the official humanitarian war narratives, and if you crave meaningful conversations on the ecological crises threatening the futures of our communities and our world, then you need to make the Global Research News Hour your weekly radio destination. For a look at the big picture, join me, Michael Welch, every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. on your downtown community broadcaster, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Saturday morning, midnight to 6. CKW 99.9 FM at CKW.ca. Don't forget your monkey.
Bye. Frankenstein, Dracula, and even the mummy are sure to end up in somebody's tummy.
No!